Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Today we have a special guest, somebody that I've met just recently, but we've become closely and vulnerably connected. And the topic today is sensitive. It could be traumatic. It is about sexual abuse and rape, and it may not be easy. It could be triggering for some of you that may have experienced this. But I think that the story is really important to be told, and it's really a beautiful, long journey, not of what happened, but the journey of healing that has taken place, and it hasn't been a short one. So I'd like to introduce my friend, Sharon, to the show.
Hey, Michelle. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for coming in today.
Yeah, of course.
Tell us, what does resilience mean to you?
Resilience to me is accountability. It is looking at something that happened to you and not necessarily saying anything around this had anything to do with me. This is not my fault. However, I am responsible for the person I allow this to turn me into. So any healing that I need to do, I'm responsible for that. Mm-hmm. Any trauma I might pass along to my kids, I'm responsible for that. So it's accountability, not for them and what happened to you, but for how you let that shape the person you become.
Absolutely.
I love that.
So let's get started. I want to make sure that we give you enough time to really do your story justice. Tell us about what happened.
Yeah. So I was very motivated as a child. I got very good grades. I ended up getting a full ride scholarship to college based on grades alone. I ended up accidentally getting a music scholarship because I accompanied a friend of mine, and the music teachers at the college asked if I would play for their choirs. And so I went to school early. I was 17. And I just, you know, world is my oyster. Before that, I was an ugly duckling. I had no experience socially, really. I had no experience with boys or men in any capacity. I was about as sheltered as you could possibly imagine. I kissed a boy in a stage production I was in, mm-hmm. but otherwise about as
no
great
dating.
As you could get. No.
No dating, no going to
I went
school.
To dances.
You went to the dances.
Yeah, but no dates.
No dates.
But no personally intimate relationships.
No. In any capacity. And my upbringing was very sheltered. Mm-hmm. I still remember not Googling because we didn't have Google back then. I remember looking up in an encyclopedia, what is an orgy? Because I couldn't, like, I heard the word and I didn't know what it was, but we didn't talk about sex in my family. I didn't go, uh-huh. It wasn't something I would go to my parents and talk about.
Yeah. So you heard that word and you knew that it had something to do with it.
Right, some connotation, but obviously it was not in the encyclopedia, just in case anybody else is going to go look. It's not. If you look up orgy in the Encyclopedia Britannica, it's not there.
That is funny. It might be today. Who knows? They might have updated it by now.
Who knows? So I got to college, and when I was growing up too, I was the oldest of seven. We weren't very well off. So, you know, thrift store clothing, I always had kind of stringy hair. I never really knew what makeup was or how to use it. Suddenly I get to college and, you know, I have girlfriends, I have roommates, and I have a job. I'm able to go get my hair straight for the first time. I buy some fun new clothes, and suddenly, like, I become attractive, but I don't know how to handle it. I don't know how to deal with it. I'm very uncomfortable with it. I'm uncomfortable with the attention, but I also like it, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is the first time boys are paying attention to me, and it's a heady experience. I mean, every girl knows that.
Right.
A guy likes you. That feels good.
Right.
So I was in a tennis class, and I met someone, and we hit it off very quickly. And we would start hanging out, and he gave me my first kiss. I remember making out for the first time ever in my life on the floor of a tennis court, which is kind of hot. I mean, that's very Hollywood, right?
Like, right.
That's very much how those scenarios play out. And I was head over heels, like 17. I think I'm in love, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Long story short, I go to a dance a couple weeks later, And I meet a group of people who share with me that this man is engaged. And I think this is the first time I start to really kind of realize that not everyone is who they say they are. Mm. Men especially, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is the first time I've interacted with a man who was not honest with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure quite how to respond to that or react to that. We never really hung out after that. At the dance, he was there with his fiance, and he pretty much knew that the jig was up, and that was all that was. But the person who ended up sharing with me that he was engaged, let's call him John. I don't want to use names. He'll be John Doe. Ended up being somebody who, in my mind at that point, was a protector for me. Somebody who was helping me learn about men who were dishonest. And that began a friendship. He would invite me over to his house. It was essentially a frat house at the school I was at. I won't say the school, just to try and keep things, not share too much personal information. But at the school, there was a frat house, and I would go. And there were five or six guys there. And I grew up, four brothers. I knew how to be friends with guys. It wasn't hard. In fact, it was in some ways easier to be friends with guys than women. So I, yeah.
But you just didn't. You hadn't had the experience of what it's like to like flirt and have boundaries and
no,
because you felt safe. You had four brothers and
right.
You felt safe. This was a safe.
Exactly. Experience. And even with this guy that was mm-hmm. engaged, we made out, right? Mm-hmm. There was no point at all during that I ever felt unsafe. Everything mm-hmm. was totally consensual. I mean, he lied, but that never made me feel physically unsafe.
Right. Right.
So I developed this relationship with this house, and I would say over the next 4 or 5 months, nothing ever got flirty with any of them. Like, I really was essentially just a sister in the house, and I got to be pretty good friends with all of them, to the point where I would say about 5 months in, I was comfortable enough having a conversation with these guys about sex, right? We talked about how we were introduced to sex and how we learned about sex when we were young. Again, you have to remember, internet's not really a thing, so everyone learned about it differently, and right. everyone had different stories. And
a lot of misinformation.
Yes. Right. Playboy magazines, I'm sure that was a, mm-hmm. a big one that people said they learned from other people, other kids. Again, no parents were really talking about this. I think right now, mm-hmm. 20 years later or so, we're a lot better at talking to our kids about sex. So much better. But back then, it was almost this mindset, if they don't know about it, then they won't get hurt by it, which is ridiculous.
Like, right.
That's not true.
Right.
As I found out. Right. So
yeah.
To continue with that story and that storyline, I did share how I, as well, learned about sex, mm-hmm. which was my grandmother's Harlequin novels in her guest house. Like, if you've ever read any of the Harlequin romance novels, you know they can get a little bit steamy.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, chest bared photos are definitely provocative.
Yeah, my grandma had them. I think my grandma owned every single Harlequin ever made.
Yeah, that's probably my grandmother too. Yeah. Like, I think there was an entire wall full of books. So it was like I had this treasure trove of information to learn about mm-hmm. sex from. So I shared that was how I learned. And I also shared that, like, the stories that, like, surprisingly to me, really stood out as being the hottest were the ones where she didn't entirely give consent at first, right? Like, where she mm-hmm. was kind of coerced into it. And I understand the psychology behind that more now as an mm-hmm. adult. But at that time, 17, I'm just thinking, what the hell is wrong with me? Like, who fantasizes about this?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for me to share.
But they make it so romantic in those books. Right? I remember reading several of those scenes actually myself. And it's like, and he swept her up and he pushed her against the wall. And he, like, it makes it yeah. sound like it's like this
so romantic.
Sweeping romantic. And as a child, you don't even know what consent is anyway. So you're not really understanding what that actually means if something like that happened to you.
Well, I remember watching Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
right? And Leia doesn't want it. And here mm-hmm. is this handsome, totally have a crush on Harrison Ford, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, kind of pushing her right for the kiss. Like her first kiss with him was not consensual.
Right.
And so in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, if a guy likes you enough, he's going to take it regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And that means he likes you extra much. Like extra.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Like that's
so unhealthy.
so wrong. But right. I mean, that's how culture kind of framed it mm-hmm. as very romantic. That was the end of the conversation. Nothing else happened after that. And we kind of went on our way. Later that night, I have my own car and I'm driving my friend John and we're going to back to my place and we park and you have to understand, like to this point, he's never expressed any interest in me romantically, mm-hmm. Sexually, in any capacity. It has been mm-hmm. pure friendship. But I did have a crush on him.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I didn't ever act on it. I wasn't entirely sure what I wanted to do with the information,
mm-hmm.
but I had a crush. So when we parked, I still remember he reached over, like he was in the passenger seat and grabbed a hold of my button on my pants and kind of just pulled a little mm-hmm. bit. And I remember just feeling at the time, oh my gosh, he likes me. He mm-hmm. wants, he's going to try and kiss me.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He did. And I think I'm just stoked at this point.
Right.
Like, oh, he likes me back. He's going to kiss me. We're going to start this relationship. And then the kissing intensifies. But we don't talk about it. We don't talk about what's happening. It just happens. And he says, the stick shift in the middle mm-hmm. was kind of getting in the way. He's like, do you want to go into the back seat? And I said, yes, why not? And we get into the back seat and things start to get go a little faster
yeah.
than I thought that they would. And I try and get him to stop. I kind of push him away a little bit. And as soon as I start to say no or push him away, I still remember him just slapping me across the face, like hard and shocking me, like completely shocking me. It's super physical. And I just kind of freeze. And I think for a minute, like I'm not entirely like, did that even just happen? Like, mm-hmm. I think I'm in almost that
You're
state of shock.
Yeah. Like,
and then he continues like, and it's like a little more forceful trying to get me to undress. And again, I try and stop him and he hits me again to the point where it's like over and over, punches to the chest, slaps across the face. And I remember starting to cry and asking him to stop over and over. And I couldn't understand what was happening. And he said, this is what you want. You said this is what you wanted. Remember how you said you were turned on by this. So, and I remember thinking, you're right. Like, did I ask for this? I didn't think I did, but did I? Again, so young.
Right.
No experience whatsoever.
And how confusing. You don't have a lot of experience. You like this guy. You just get excited about, I'm going to have him make it. The possibilities. Like, he'll be my boyfriend. And yeah. you're into that. And you're willing to get into the back seat because you're like, I'm going to make out. I'm going to make
right.
out with this boy that I just love. And I'm so excited about. And then all
and imagine
of a sudden,
I haven't made out with anybody since that guy in the beginning, the one who was engaged. And so now suddenly I know what it feels like. It feels good.
Right.
Like it's supposed to feel good.
And,
that is
and you're excited
how we're designed.
Because you actually have built a long relationship with this guy. This
yes.
wasn't over just a couple weeks. This had been
exactly.
a long relationship. It had been trusting. There was never a breach of that trust
Ever.
Or an indication of a pushed boundary or any of those things. And so here you are in one moment, you're excited and you're like, ah, you know, I'm going to make out and you climb in the back seat and all of a sudden it switches in just a moment. When we come back, we're going to pick up and talk about that shock and what happened.
What happened after that? Yeah.
Yeah. we're back. I am so sorry. I can't imagine being a 17-year-old girl and being in the situation where you are so excited to be with somebody that you really had built a relationship and that you found what you thought was trust. And so quickly, the moment turns from excitement to, I'm sure, terror, shock,
more
disbelief.
Shock. There are tiny segments of what happened or little quotes that I still remember or little glimpses of his eyes. But for the most part, I don't remember a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a lot of it. He would ask me to ask for things mm-hmm. to be done to me. He would say, ask for such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't, he would hit me again.
So it wasn't really a choice.
Right.
He was making you ask.
Right. It was hard.
It sounded like it got really brutally violent.
It did. But there was definitely a physical assault on top of the sexual assault that happened. To the point where when the situation wrapped up, I went home to my apartment, and that same night my roommate had ended up leaving a stove on the pot, and the soup had completely burned out and started a kitchen fire. So there's a fire department there. Everything was in disarray. So I was able to kind of sneak in unnoticed pretty easily to our apartment and into the bathroom, locked the door, drew the bath, and got in the bath. And I just sat there, and I think I was in there for about 2 hours before my roommate, who was also my best friend, we went to school together, knocked on the door, and I didn't answer. And I just remember laying there, and I don't know how she got in, but she had to have, because she got in and the tub was red. It was full of blood from part of the attack. And she got me to the hospital. When I got there, they did the rape kit, but it wasn't like now where it's a female nurse. They called in the cops. It was a male cop who did my rape kit. So I had to
unbelievable
take off clothing and let him take photos, bruises all over the chest. And then when they were finished, on the face as well, I had
really
to get.
Quickly, did you say what happened? Did you put words to it in that initial moment? Right. Because so many can't.
No.
So your roommate saw something was clearly wrong. You didn't go to her and say this happened. And then the cops come and they're physically examining you, but you did not verbalize.
I honestly could. You I couldn't. Can't remember. Yeah. I did. It's a little fuzzy on the details of who I told and when I told. I just remember my friend drove me.
But it was evident you had been assaulted.
Yes.
Without you saying a word, your roommate knew. You didn't run into your roommate and say, oh my gosh, this happened. She found you in a bath full of your own blood. Wow.
Right. And after the rape kit had finished and the doctors were finally able to treat me, I had to have a few vaginal stitches.
Oh my gosh.
From what had happened. And then I wrapped up at the hospital. The officer on duty told me to come by the station the next day. My parents were called, but they weren't going to be able to get there until after it was going to be in talking to the police. So I don't remember anything about going home, falling asleep, waking up. The next memory I have is going to the police station, parking my car, going inside.
By yourself.
Yeah, I'm by myself. And it's the cop who was there. I don't think it was the one who did the rape kit, because I think he was more middle-aged. There were two cops. There was one who was much older. He had white hair, so I know he was much older. And one who was much younger, almost rookie. And the older cop was kind of taking lead, and he was walking me down a hallway. And then we're in front of a door, and he just stops in front of the door, and he says, we had a chance to talk to him. He says, this is all a misunderstanding and he wants to talk to you. And so he opens the door and he's in the room and he leads me inside and he's like, I'll give you a minute to talk. And then he shuts the door and walks out.
He left you there with him
alone. Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Left you in there with your attacker alone.
Hours after.
And of course, he's furious with me and yelling at me about how I'm about to ruin his life. He's like, you asked for this. You told me this is what you liked. I don't understand. Why are we here? Like, I know you wanted this. You said you liked it. You asked for it. All things that technically were true. And so I'm mm-hmm. saying, well, yeah. And I feel so beaten down by the time it's done. I don't think I'm in there longer than 10 minutes when the older officer comes back in and asks me, well, do you want to press charges? And I could not shake my head no fast enough. I just wanted to get out of there as fast as I possibly could.
Oh my gosh.
And I still remember him looking at me and saying, it's okay. These kind of misunderstandings happen all the time.
Please tell me we've gotten better than that now.
No.
Please? No?
No, I mean, absolutely not, Jenny.
I will tell you,
process rape kits. We don't prosecute rapists. Does it happen? Of course, we are doing some. But
well, and have we gotten better at helping our daughters know what rape is, or that absolutely you're pressing charges? And how, I can't believe you went by yourself. I'm thinking, I'm just okay. I got it. How fast can I go talk to my girls again? I have a 5-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 17-year-old. Wait, I got to talk to my boys too, and more blunt than I think, and more direct than I think. So.
Obviously, it is not consent without an enthusiastic yes, and there's never a time for violence.
Well, I was going to say, how did they let him go? The bruises, okay, let's say even if you had sex consensually, that doesn't explain the fact that your body's beaten. So you didn't press charges.
I did not.
You left, and then what? Did you ever press charges?
No, I actually went to therapy to try and help myself understand why I asked for it.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?
I did blame myself.
Did you talk to that close girlfriend or your parents or anyone?
When my parents got there, I had already been to the hospital and I'd already been to the police station. And they didn't talk to the police. They didn't talk to the hospital. They just took my story. And based on what I was telling them, right? Like the police didn't do anything. The hospital didn't do anything. And I was telling them,
I'm not pressing charges.
So they think it's a date rape. And I actually didn't know that that's how my mom saw it until last year when I finally, for the first time ever, told her what actually happened. So my parents had no idea.
So they couldn't have advocated for you because you didn't. You were beaten down to the point that you couldn't even advocate for yourself.
At that point, I didn't even want to talk about it to anybody at all. I was beating myself up for not saying no. Right? For not knowing that what was happening. For not... Because if I really...
For being in such a state of stupor as he hit you.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. No.
And the confusion as to why does this seem so attractive in the book, but this doesn't feel good. I don't want this.
I don't even know if I even drew that correlation. It was like I disconnected. Like
So, I don't know how old you are now. You said this happened
I'm 38.
Okay, so this is about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what does the next month, 6 months, year or two look like, let alone the next 20?
I lost my scholarship entirely. I couldn't focus anymore at school. I worked at a library, but he would come in and sit and study while I was there working. And so I quit my job. So I basically lost all of my income. So I couldn't stay there anymore. Ended up going back home. None of the rest of my friends, obviously his friends in that house, could look at me or even talk to me anymore after that. They all thought I was trying to ruin his life. Even his bishop called me in and said he was LDS and wanted to serve a mission. And the bishop was like, he is saying that this thing has happened and I've heard stories that it wasn't. Like, he's a really good guy. We just want to make sure that this really is just a misunderstanding. And at that point, I had been so brainwashed by even therapy saying, well, you have to be accountable for your part in this, that I said, yeah, he's fine. I wouldn't even call him a rapist for years.
What changed and when to where the point you recognized how victimized you had been?
I don't even know. Maybe a couple of years ago.
Decades.
I still remember, like, even when I would talk about what happened to other men. During this time, I was writing a missionary who, when I told him, he never talked to me again. So I learned. And also, I mean, this is going to sound sick, but I learned I would get attention from the wrong kind of men, but I'd get attention when I would say, oh, I'm into this really kind of dark stuff. And when you're in a place where you're just trying to run from pain, attention feels really good. And so you start, I started meeting men on phone lines. That was back when we still could call
the 1-900.
Yeah, versus the chat. And chat was just barely starting to. I still remember like Yahoo, AOL.
Mm-hmm. MySpace.
And meeting guys. And I never like would fully let them go all the way. But it was a way to numb out. It really was. And I didn't know at the time that I was enjoying that numb out feeling. At the time, I thought I was just living my biggest, brightest, fullest, most sexually adventurous life. Like I was so in tune with my sexuality, so confident with who I am sexually. That was the story I was telling because that was safer.
That was the way to take charge.
That was easier to accept.
Yes, it was a way for me to take control of what had happened versus...
Mm-hmm. You've switched the narrative in your head.
I have. I'm just a very sexually adventurous, promiscuous woman.
And that brought with it the attention and the affection that, that like you said... can fill that void, whatever that void.
Not in healthy ways.
Not in healthy
ways. And I learned that later.
For sure.
Absolutely learned
it later. But to try to get in the mindset of where you could see how that would happen.
Absolutely. To the point where...
It's terrifying.
Yeah. I had to just take absolute breaks from dating for like a year before I could like reset.
Okay. We'll take one more break and come back and talk a little bit about what... lessons learned and how you've come to now reframe what happened in your mind.
Yeah. Back.
So coming back, you've kind of rewritten this narrative in your mind to where it couldn't have been as awful as you thought because you've been beaten down to not look at it as the assault we can clearly see it is today. So
very much so.
Did you get to the point in the next decade or two where you could have a healthy relationship that you felt safe in?
I told you I ended up taking a break for a little while.
Yeah.
I met someone at that time who was... barely divorced, so kind of going through their own trauma. We
sure.
developed a trauma bond very quickly. We thought it was love.
Mm-hmm. Easy to confuse.
Absolutely. She is a woman now. After we got divorced a few years ago, she is fully transitioned to a woman. But I think on some level, I could sense that feminine energy in her, and she felt like a safe relationship for me. Mm. Honestly, she's my best friend, and we had a great relationship for years. And she felt very safe to me. But I think when I was in that relationship, I did start to heal. And as I healed, the more I realized I wasn't in love with this person, not the way you would if you were wanting a passionate physical relationship, to the point where I didn't want to sleep with this person. And that made me feel like terrible person. Here this person is taking care of me. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I owe this person my entire security, right? The roof over my head, the food that I eat, and I don't want to sleep with them. That's not okay. That's a terrible thing to go through. So, yeah, no, that one was a hard one. Even when I finally said I need a divorce, I felt terrible. I felt awful.
So when you started sharing this with me, one of the things you said is, I'm ready to tell my story because I want to convey that it's a process. It takes
such
time. And to reach out to other listeners that might be listening who have not been honest with themselves, maybe even.
Absolutely.
About their own trauma. We know this happens more than it gets reported all the time.
I went into a treatment program for mental health briefly, and I remember walking into the wrong room, and it was a trauma track group. They were helping people who had been through severe trauma in their life, and I walk in, and something about the room, something about the energy in the room just resonated with me, and I'm like, I don't have any trauma. I haven't experienced trauma in my life, but I feel like I need to be here. Interesting. And so I asked if I could just come. I could just come anyway, even though it wasn't the class or the program I was supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. And I still remember, like, as part of this process, you're supposed to list down anything, any trauma you may have gone through in your life. And part of it was like, we had to read it up in front of everyone. And I'm just starting to write things down. I'm like, oh, maybe I've been through a thing or two. Maybe I've had some trauma.
And you've kind of numbed it out.
I had. And there was something about that class that definitely ripped off a lot of Band-Aids for me, to the point where the relationship that I was in at the time, I recognized suddenly as being very toxic and abusive. This was one I had developed after my divorce, and it was not healthy for me in any capacity. And I don't really want to get into that relationship, if that's okay, but I did recognize that I had to heal in order to get out of that relationship, to find the strength, which means I had to acknowledge these things that had happened. And not only just acknowledge them, but also to forgive myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Forgive some of the main reason I was even looking for help is I noticed that I was getting more angry with my kids. I had less patience with them. I didn't have enough emotional bandwidth to be the mom I wanted to be for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I got help. That's why I started seeking out therapy and learning all of these things, and then realizing that I had to fall apart completely in order to rebuild. And it was scary. As like the last year and a half, I would say it's been crazy.
How did you learn to forgive yourself? I mean, I hear your story, and there's no part of it that makes sense to me that you would blame yourself, although I can understand the psychology as to why you would. But I'm like, you just didn't know.
I would say forgiveness for the way I treated other people, because I was in a place of pain, like the way I treated my ex, right? Like, I shouldn't have gotten married. I never should have. No, I should have healed first. The way that I was treating my kids.
But that still sounds like you're blaming yourself. How did you make...
Well, I had to separate it. I had to separate the act of what happened is not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
The person I allow that situation to turn me into is my fault. So if I need healing, it is my job to go to a program. If that's not enough, I need to find another program. If I need more help, I need to find a different therapist. Like, my healing is my number one job.
So what I'm asking is, how do you go back and embrace and love that 17-year-old and tell her this was never your fault?
I did that. I did. It wasn't. It was absolutely not her fault.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that you know that, because
it took me a while.
Yeah. I mean, I can hear the like logical fallacies of like, you're reading this book, you don't have this knowledge. I was a 17-year-old girl once. Like, we don't know things until we know learn them.
Yeah.
And sometimes some of us really have to learn them the hard way. Like, we just don't understand what we're getting ourselves into. I was a little bit of that girl.
Well, and we're also very black and white in our thinking, right? A woman is either pure and upstanding and never thinks about sex, or she's a slut.
Or she's a harlot.
Right? Mm-hmm. But that's not true. We are pure sexual beings who have healthy, vibrant sexual sides of ourselves that should be allowed to come out without fear that those will be taken advantage of and pushed too far.
Yeah.
You said, you know, our parents didn't talk about this, and we do a better job talking about this. We still have a long way to go.
A long way.
As a culture. My daughter and I, she's 17, which just makes me shudder to think that's how young, because sometimes 17 can sound like, oh, that's an older teenager, young woman. I'm like, no, she's a baby. But we talk a lot about politics and social movements, and we've been talking about like abortion laws and different things and the different attention that buzzword can get. And we've had some really good conversations about, but why aren't we having more open conversations and putting more resources into talking about human sexuality? Not just a pregnancy that may or may not result from that, but as a culture to look at how beautiful human sexuality is and how quickly twisted it can be and manipulated, and that power struggle that can ensue. We don't talk about that.
No.
We either, like you said, we either say just abstinence or holy cow, you're the prostitute down the street, which doesn't do anyone any good.
No.
Even in a healthy monogamous relationship or consensual relationship, we have to get better at recognizing the sexual nature of our nature, right?
Yeah.
I love that you said that, how beautiful that can be, the pleasure that it can bring, the physical, the psychological, emotional.
The nuance of the sexual experience.
Yes, mm-hmm. Without it being this clandestine secret for dark, dirty rooms and magazines. You know what
right.
I mean? We do. We polarize. We go to both. And I think, I mean, this is going to spur some great conversations at my house. Like, I'm terrified. And people have heard me say this. One of my daughters, her love language is for sure physical touch. And she's just little. And she was very little when her dad died. And I, from that very early stages after his death, I've looked at that girl and thought, we are going to have to be so open with her. Because when you said that about the void or the hurt being filled with this attention
yes.
or this affection, and it actually feels empowering
mm-hmm.
and yet can be so manipulated. I'm like, that's my biggest fear
Absolutely.
For this little girl. Is that her own trauma and tragedy of her background combined with her personality type is going to lead
and
her to
And her love
have,
language.
And that's what I mean. Like
yeah.
Her love language is going to lead
but
her to
But her personality,
some,
too. I know who you're talking about.
And her personality, too. And it's going to lead her to some scuzzy boyfriend in junior high that is going to take complete advantage of her. And she's going to think it's love. And he's taking care. You know, and that mm-hmm. scares me to death and makes me realize, you know, again, back to the abortion conversation. Are we talking about get pregnant or don't get pregnant? Are we talking about human sexuality
right.
to our sons and our daughters?
Yep.
Are we talking to both what consent really means? Like you said, we don't talk about consent. And do we talk about the psychology behind it? We don't. And it's not necessarily one political party's conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not one religion's
conversation.
No, it's
the human conversation that we need to be having, especially in this state.
The human experience, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that makes things hard for me, especially when I think about women in porn and they're talking about how empowered they are and they're living their best life and they're feeling empowered in their sexuality. And I'm like, I said all those things.
Yeah, you said I've been there
yeah.
before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've said all those things, but I didn't feel those things.
You know, I actually had a conversation with a man and he was saying, you know, the women that make that, it's okay because they really enjoy it. I'm like, who says they really actually enjoy this? And he says, it's at the end of all of this pornography. So I went and pulled up some pornography to just see
what they say.
And they are actually having the women now at the end of their little trailer say, I consented to this. I enjoyed it. This is what I felt about it.
They're saying that during their endorphin high, though. You've just had an orgasm.
Yeah. Right.
Do they talk to those women the next morning?
Yeah, and the other thing about it is are they being compelled to? Like, I have a hard time believing
There's
it, right? Like,
too.
I just, and also sometimes you might believe that's true, and it might be
say,
true
and
for
it
some
might be
women.
Filling some other void that
in the moment.
Has a deeper,
right?
A deeper
some
grief
deep
or
wound,
hurt.
Trauma that unhealed,
or
stuff,
worth, like or, your sense of worth, like
yeah.
If you're being praised as being these beautiful, wonderful things, now whether that's right or wrong, it can feel.
It feels good.
Yeah. I'm getting this attention. I'm being
yes.
complimented. And then you confuse your value for your body or the sexuality.
Which how much better would it be if those could be the same?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
In a
safe and healthy way. And I'm trying to figure out what that looks like. That's my next step.
I would love to talk with you mom to mom about how you talk to your kids. Because you obviously have a different experience from a viewpoint that most of us hope we never, ever, ever have to have.
I'm very open. I actually keep on a bookshelf in very clear visual for my kids, a book called Sex for Dummies. So if they ever want to know something about sex, they won't necessarily go look on the internet per se. And it's just appealing enough or interesting enough that they're like, huh, sex, that's an interesting word. I'm going to go and read that book. I still remember when my 10-year-old saw, he's like, Mom, what is this? And he's like horrified. He's like, why do you have this book? And I'm like, in case you have any questions, it's there.
Yeah.
Go for it.
I love that.
My parents don't know this, and I don't know if they listen to the show or not, but the honest to gosh truth is I was 12 years old, 10 years old, when I discovered my mom's Joy of Sex book, and I read that thing three times cover to cover before I was 16.
We're
we're we're curious about sex. Like
every time they left the house, I ran into my mother's closet, sat in the bottom of her closet, and read that book. And I read it cover to cover, and it covered all kinds of topics, things that I didn't even quite understand. Big topics, homosexuality, and you know, this was in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And bestiality, things that were not okay or under the taboo section. They had a whole section on taboo things, sexual taboo practices. And so, I was a young kid getting a full education.
Education's going to happen whether you're involved or not.
Do you want it to be accurate or skewed? Or
I wish I would have gotten my education from Sex for Dummies versus Harlequin.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Where you've got that dominant, submissive.
A little more well-rounded view of what it was or is.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
This has been a really important conversation. I'll finish with what Michelle started with. I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry that this is your story, but I'm so grateful that you would share it and help many of us that probably live in this same little naive bubble of thinking that would never happen to me or my child or my friend or my sister. And yet, like Michelle said, it happens far more often than statistics even say. And so this has been eye-opening and helpful, and our heart goes out to you and everyone who's endured this type of assault on your person and everything. And grateful that you would share with us your thoughts on resilience and healing and hope, and just really grateful for everyone for being with us here today.
If you have been a victim of sexual assault, you can access help and resources by calling Utah's 24-hour sexual violence helpline at 1-888-421-1100. You can also call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-4673 for free confidential counseling. And please reach out if you have been a victim of sexual violence.
Yeah. Say something to someone.
And if I can really, really quick, Sapria is an amazing organization. They help victims of girls, if you've been a victim of sexual assault and you're under the age of 18, they offer a free week-long retreat. You just need to go and to their website, sapria.com or org. Shoot, I won't know. We'll
put a link in the show.
Okay, we'll put the link in there. And you just register and you can go, and it's incredibly healing. It helped me a lot, so I want to give them a shout out. Sapria.
Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing this story. I really appreciate it. I know there are women out there that have not shared their story. They feel shame, they feel guilt, and they feel responsible. And I think it's a really important story that you came on to share. So thank you so much. And I know it's going to help. It's going to help somebody out there. If you have a story that you'd like to share with us, please reach out to us. You can direct message us on either Facebook or Instagram. Instagram, we're Relentlessly Resilient Podcast, and on Facebook, Relentlessly Resilient. Feel free to DM us. I personally respond to those as often and as quickly as I can, and we'd love to get you on the show. Thank you.
And remember, whatever you do today, please remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives.